words appear. The following is based on true events. In a screening room, a film projector starts. NHK, Japan Broadcasting Corporation, presents in association with Netflix and the support of the Netherlands Film Fund and the Netherlands Film Production Incentive. A NHK, Japan Broadcasting Corporation, FAT Productions, and Don Carmody Television DCTV production. A newsreel shows citizens waving Japanese flags as a military procession passes. Tim Ahern, Paul Freeman, ordnance strafes a countryside, then a fighter plane crashes. Serge Hazanavicius, corpses litter the ground. Marcel Hensema, William Hope, Jonathan Hyde, a squadron drops torpedo bombs. A mushroom cloud appears. Michael Ironside, Irfan Khan. On a warship, a Japanese dignitary signs a document. Stephen McHattie, David Say, Shinya Tsukamoto, Julian Wadham. Bert Matthias, Hadwi Shminis, Gabiha Haraminayate, Porgy Franson, Kistudis Yaxtas. Justices preside over a courtroom, casting Kelly Valentine Hendry and Victor Jenkins. Production design consultant Naoji Kawaguchi, costumes by Brenda Schenner. Production designer Harry Amerlon, director of photography Rolf Deakins, NSC, edited by Daryl Davis, CCE, music by Robert Carley. Co-producers Takafumi Yuki, Elwin Louie. Producers Shinsuke Naito, Hans De Weers, David Cormican. Executive producers Takashi Enjo, Shinsuke Naito, David Lee, Hans De Weers, Don Carmody, David Cormican. Words appear under Japanese characters. Tokyo Trial. Written by Keys Van Banyam, Rob King, Max Mannix, and Toru Takagi. With script contributions by Peter Verhoef. Directed by Rob King and Peter Verhoef. Archival footage shows cannons firing, infantry charging, and munitions exploding.
Between the 1930s and 1940s, Japan sends troops to the Chinese mainland, across Southeast Asia, and into the Pacific Islands to engage in warfare that ultimately leaves tens of millions of people dead.
A grief-stricken man holds a deceased child in his arms. Survivors linger in villages reduced to rubble, and a mushroom cloud expands.
On September 2, 1945, Japan signs the Instrument of Surrender to end the war. The Allied powers appoint General Douglas MacArthur as supreme commander and quickly occupy all of Japan. Former Japanese cabinet ministers and military leaders are arrested. In November of the same year, leaders from Nazi Germany, Japan's ally in the war, go on trial in Nuremberg. In January 1946, using Nuremberg as a reference, Supreme Commander MacArthur enacts a charter for the Tokyo trial that outlines three categories of war crimes. These are crimes against peace, conventional war crimes, and crimes against humanity. 28 former Japanese leaders are then charged as Class A war criminals. The Tokyo trial begins.
Imperial Hotel, Tokyo, March 11th, 1946. In a room, a blonde-haired man composes a letter.
My dearest Lise, it was a long journey from the Netherlands to Tokyo, but I'm safe and settled into the magnificent Imperial Hotel. It's a miracle the hotel is even standing. From here to Yokohama, there's nothing much left but ashes and ruins.
A photo shows Lise with five children.
The hardships faced by the people here are almost unimaginable. Soon we will begin the difficult task of searching out justice amid the devastation and chaos.
Elsewhere, a tall man eyes photos.
The tribunal is being led by Justice William Webb, an Australian appointed by General MacArthur, the Supreme Commander. Most of the other judges have arrived and are staying at the hotel. We are all men of different birthplaces, backgrounds, and I suppose different ideas. Justice McDougall is a trusted friend of the Canadian Prime Minister. Even though Chiang Kai-shek is now fighting the Communist Army, his administration appointed Justice Mai to represent China. Justice Northcroft was a Supreme Court judge in New Zealand. Justice Higgins from the Superior Court in Massachusetts is the American appointment to our tribunal. The French have appointed Justice Bernard, who fought and served as a justice in their African colonies. General Zarianov, who represents the Soviet Union, is a loyal subordinate to Stalin. Lord Patrick, a Scottish justice, was chosen to represent the United Kingdom. He is due to arrive any moment, and I am eager to meet him. My love to you and all of the children.
The white-haired Justice Patrick clutches a cane as he rides in the back of a black sedan, which drives through a sparsely populated area reduced to rubble. Small fires smolder in the war-torn countryside. A chauffeur in military dress conducts the luxury vehicle along an unpaved road where they pass a few inhabitants lingering near a truck. Bearing a Union Jack in lieu of a license plate, the car winds its way toward the remains of blown-out buildings looming in the distance. As a staff member leads Patrick toward the entrance of the Imperial Hotel, the Scottish Justice's driver opens the sedan's trunk. Sunlight streams through the glass doors of a lobby where Justice Patrick approaches the concierge. The blonde man stops beside him and sets his letter on the desk.
William Patrick.
Lord Patrick. I'm Justice Rowling from the Netherlands. Very nice to meet you.
Justice Rowling. A pleasure.
So, it was quite a long trip, isn't it?
Quite. What's the commotion?
Oh, that's Sir William Webb from Australia. He's our tribunal president.
No more bloodshed to cover. These reporters tried to stir up trouble in other ways.
Why did General MacArthur choose you as the president of the tribunal?
Give us the goods.
Well, you better ask the general that one, boys. If you can get him to talk to you.
I would have thought he'd pick up an American or even a British judge.
All my colleagues are fine jurists. But Australia is a Pacific country. We fought the Japanese right to our own shores. That has to count for something.
How long do you expect the trial to last?
6 months.
That long?
We are making history, gentlemen. And that takes time. Good day to you.
Donning a Homburg hat, the tall Webb departs.
Making history.
A heavyset reporter eyes his slightly built colleague. In his room, Rowling takes a violin from its case and begins to play. Elsewhere, wooden rosary beads lie on a box atop a desk where Justice Webb writes. Craning his neck, the tall Australian eyes a folio with 28 passport-sized photos of Japanese men. Later, debris and rubble cover the ground leading up to a sprawling institutional building. People mill about in a vast antechamber where a bespectacled man greets a thin colleague.
I am Justice Bernard from France.
Le juge Magou, de Montréal.
Vous parlez un petit peu français.
Gentlemen and lady, for those of you who have not met him, may I introduce Mr. Justice Northcroft from New Zealand. He will also be serving as my acting president. This grand building will be our working space for the duration of the tribunal. Follow me, please.
The gray-haired Northcroft smiles. On a staircase, a wavy-haired justice greets a burly man wearing a Soviet officer's coat and hat.
I'm Higgins, from Massachusetts.
A matronly woman follows.
Has the general been to Massachusetts?
Спрашивает, были вы ли там когда-нибудь?
Я не посещаю места, названия которых я не могу произнести.
The general does not like to visit the places with the names he cannot spell.
Higgins nods. Webb leads the other justices inside a wood-paneled conference room and turns on the lights. A list on a chalkboard reads Japan, China, Indonesia, Philippines, Malaya.
Well, this building once housed the Japanese military academy and the war ministry. Some of the accused would have planned their attacks right here in this room. Now we will use it to decide their fate.
Скажи им, что мы все разделяем большую ответственность.
The general says you all share great responsibility.
As individual judges in our own countries, we decide the fate of others, from divorce to fraud to murder. But the issues we face on this stage are extremely complex and will require our collective skills and experience. You've all been briefed in advance, and you have all read the charter that governs our duties. However, please indulge me as I take us through a summary of the challenge ahead.
Webb erases the chalkboard.
It falls upon us to deal with three categories of crime, the most striking of which is crimes against peace, more frequently referred to as crimes of aggression.
He writes, crimes of aggression.
We are being asked whether or not these leaders conspired to plan and wage aggressive war. We are also being asked to consider crimes against humanity.
Rowling lowers his gaze.
They include Murder, extermination, enslavement, deportation, and other iniquities, including crimes committed by a power on its own citizens.
Northcroft listens intently.
Finally, we have to consider conventional war crimes. That is, ill treatment of prisoners of war and atrocities committed on the battlefield. In other words, crimes that violate the traditional rules of war.
In China, millions of people were killed, most of them civilians.
I sympathize with your countrymen, Justice May, as I do with the soldiers and civilians of all our nations. However, we must be careful as we tread a fine line between justice and revenge.
I wasn't thinking of revenge. I was referring to the fact that the atrocities in China are grave crimes under international law.
With respect to Justice May, aside from courtroom blueprints, Nuremberg clearly provides us with strong legal precedents to uphold.
Oh, there are many differences between events in Europe and those here in the Pacific.
It seems to me the crimes are the same.
Justice May nods.
The whole world will be following this trial, and every argument and decision we make.
All the more reason to uphold the precedents of Nuremberg. Yes.
As I was saying, we face an immense challenge. I am confident we will find a way through it.
Under Webb's gaze, Patrick flashes a chastened look. Rowling's eyes dart. Later, in a corridor, Northcroft addresses May.
How very tragic that China should have re-engaged in civil war.
Yes, a heartbreaking waste of lives. Some of my family are missing.
I'm so sorry.
Patrick and Rowling bring up the rear.
I believe you play the violin, Justice Rowling.
Somebody complained already?
Not at all. I heard music in the hall. Perhaps you'll play for the rest of us some evening.
Only after you've all had plenty to drink.
Our courtroom? Designed to replicate the one being used to try the Nazis in Nuremberg.
The tribunal stands at a doorway. With a steely-eyed gaze, MacDougall enters, followed by Bernard, May, and the others. The justices stare solemnly at the vast space as staffers make preparations.
This evening, there will be a screening of the film about the Nuremberg trial in the hotel cinema, for those of you who want to attend.
In the cinema, the justices watch archival newsreel footage of an aerial squadron dropping torpedo bombs on a countryside. Armored vehicles advance, followed by automobiles and motorcycles. Smoke drifts over the landscape, and flames burn in the windows of a high-rise. Citizens wave German flags bearing the swastika as a motorcade passes along a street. Then men in striped clothing pile bodies in mounds.
Nationalistic pride turned a blind eye toward the horrors of these concentration camps. As the corpses continued to be counted, this grim footage was entered into evidence in Nuremberg, where 24 political and military leaders of the Third Reich are tried for war crimes and for crimes against humanity.
Rowling stands and heads out. In a corridor, he stares pensively, a lit cigarette in his fingers. He drags on it, then turns to see Patrick hobbling over on his cane. Rowling paces in a circle as his Scottish colleague stops nearby, staring off with a grave expression.
Some of my colleagues on the Utrecht court were taken away. All of them Jewish.
Patrick looks Rowling in the eye, then averts his gaze again.
I saw a lot of horrors in World War I. Nothing quite like tonight. That is why I consider this tribunal to be so important.
As Patrick steps away, leaving Rowling staring pensively, the others file down the corridor. Later, the tribunal convenes in chambers, where Justices May, Rowling, and MacDougall stand before a map.
Japan occupied Asia Pacific all the way from China to here, The Dutch East Indies, overtaken early in the war for strategic purposes.
Those natural resources, oil and rubber.
Oh, precisely. But because of Japan's occupation in China and Indochina, as well as its relationship with the fascists in Germany and Italy, the United States and others had placed an embargo on them before the war. Japan has no natural oil resources. Therefore, Indonesia became an important target.
Mm-hmm. Some of my wife's family were there at the time. They were forced into Japanese prison camps.
Gentlemen, please join us.
Webb sits at the head of the long table, perusing a list of typed names with two names handwritten below.
28 men have been accused of war crimes. These men are made up of military leaders, politicians, and others who may have influenced them. The jurisdiction of the trial, period we're interested in, starts with the Pact of Paris in 1928 and ends with Japan's surrender in 1945. I open the floor for discussion.
I have one question. How was the list of the accused constructed?
Webb looks past Rowling to Northcroft.
A team of prosecutors combed through the Japanese documents, intercepts, and the accounts of expert witnesses.
Considering that Japan has had 17 prime ministers in the last 15 years, and that as soon as the war ended, the Japanese burned many of their documents, the list must have been hard work.
Do you have a particular point you wish to make, Justice Rowling?
It all looks rather arbitrary. And then suddenly two new names have been added at the bottom. On what grounds?
Justice Zaryanov can answer that.
The Russian general sets down his pen and folds his hands as his interpreter listens closely.
Shigemitsu participated in Japan's conspiracy when he was an ambassador in Moscow.
I believe our Soviet friends have a keen interest in prosecuting Shigemitsu and Umezu.
Because they are considered anti-communists?
Moscow asked that they be added. General MacArthur and the prosecution obviously agreed.
Higgins gazes at Zaryanov, who shifts in his seat. He emphatically taps the table.
The general does not wish this matter debated in this informal way.
Rowling's gaze drifts.
The names are here, and the evidence will be presented later.
Is not the purpose of this meeting to speak openly?
Oh, yes, that's important. But the list is a fait accompli. The Russians made a request to add two names. We acceded to their request. The matter is now closed.
So what then is your agenda, Sir William?
To focus on our goals with respect to the definitions of the crimes and whether those crimes were committed.
You have previously defined the crimes for us. As I see it, therefore, our goal is to decide whether the accused should be released back into the world or imprisoned or executed in order to pay for their crimes and thus dissuade anyone else from ever engaging in similar actions.
Agreed.
Well stated, Lord Patrick.
At night, servicemen stand outside the Imperial Hotel. In a guest room, Rowling plays violin for Patrick, Northcroft, and McDougal, who listen attentively in armchairs.
Well done, Rowling.
Thank you.
Music is what we need. And this.
Justice Patrick crosses to a desk and offers Rowling a snifter of brandy.
Thank you very much.
A Dutch man who doesn't drink.
As long as I can do with the violin, I can do without the brandy.
I understand.
He pours McDougal a drink.
At home, I survived the stress by gardening. Not much chance of that here, I'm afraid.
Cheers.
So, tell us, what do you think about the tribunal so far?
Well, I find it fascinating.
That's a safe answer. Go on.
I'm keen to discover how those in charge of Japan came to their decisions.
You'll only discover that the politicians in the military do not always follow the same script.
Yes. And too often in these circumstances, the military prevail.
Of course, it hardly matters whether they knew or not. If the Japanese politicians lost control of their military, that makes them more, not less, culpable.
I agree.
Even if they were lied to?
The others look askance at Rowling.
Perhaps we're getting ahead of ourselves this evening. Let's return to the music, shall we?
Well, then I think that I'm going to play
another Chrysler.
How wonderful.
Yes?
Good.
Yeah.
As the others settle into their seats, Rowling lifts his instrument to his shoulder. A montage of archival footage shows an aerial view of a desolate landscape. A woman sifts through debris. A crowd bustles through a village's narrow walkway. A girl gazes up, seated atop rubble. A man bends under the weight of the pile of possessions on his back. Women distribute ladles of milk to a line of children. A man collects spilled dry goods in his cap. Adults walk down a city street, and kids march behind their teacher. Children pick wildflowers in a meadow. Vendors ply meager wares in a marketplace. A boy with close-cropped hair gazes toward the camera. Then another child in military dress cranes his neck as he stares forward. In chambers, Webb affixes a photo of a bespectacled, mustached man to a corkboard, where it joins identical-sized pictures of others arranged in neat rows. He takes a seat.
I would like to discuss the Emperor's culpability in the war. I imagine this will create debate.
Sir William, he's not been indicted.
I know.
This was not on your agenda the other day.
True, but today it is.
It is not for us as judges to tamper with the agenda.
We need to get at the truth, regardless of the consequences.
I agree. And that's why I think we should discuss of the Emperor's culpability.
Higgins rolls his eyes.
I wrote a report about the Japanese military during the war, so I'm very familiar with their politics and protocol. The Emperor did have ultimate responsibility, which is why I want us to consider his part in all of this.
Patrick fidgets.
Apropos to this, I wish to bring up certain protocol of our own. It is obvious there'll be times when we will differ with each other. On these hopefully rare occasions, we should consider how to present our position, even if we can't come to a unanimous decision.
As General Zarianov shifts in his seat, Justice Webb puts on his spectacles.
The general believes that the issue of the emperor could go on forever. It is best to answer the issue as raised by Justice Mee.
Exactly.
As Justice Rowling raises his hand, Zarianov points to him.
He made a joke about being in school because you put up your hand.
In my country, it is customary to honor the confidentiality of the judge's chamber.
In my country, too.
And even a majority verdict is presented as unanimous. So dissent or contrary arguments are never disclosed until after the trial is over. And I would like to propose that we adopt this process.
I will second the motion.
All right. Today, all those in favor of Justice Rowling's motion?
The other judges raise their hands.
Carried.
An American flag flies atop a columned building. In an office, a balding man faces Justice Webb across a desk.
The Allied forces have decided to add a judge from India and one from the Philippines.
Washington was opposed to representation from India from the beginning.
The State Department has changed its mind. They seem to think it prudent that we add a few more Asian judges to the mix.
I can manage the increased number.
Good. I have a few recommendations for you. And I'd also like to speak at the opening of the tribunal. I think it might help to move things along.
Well, the trial and its affairs are the purview of the judges. As president of the tribunal, I cannot let you speak, nor can I allow you to influence our deliberations.
The balding, khaki-clad man grabs a corncob pipe from his desk near a peaked officer's cap.
You have a definite lack of detente, Webb. I like that. All right. I'll withdraw my request.
Why has the Emperor Hirohito been excluded from the list of accused?
Are you asking as a representative of Australia?
No, not in any official capacity.
Ah.
The American eyes Webb suspiciously, then stands and paces to a curtained window.
I have found no tangible evidence that the Emperor played a decisive role in the Japanese political decisions of the past decade. Now, I wrote those very words to Eisenhower back in January.
MacArthur shows Webb a letter.
The Emperor Hirohito is a figure of great importance. It's through him that we'll legitimize and justify our reform program going forward.
Are you telling me?
Yes.
Your next meeting is waiting for you, sir.
Thank you.
He returns the letter to a file folder.
And thank you.
Webb opens his mouth, then tightens his lips. At night, a car pulls up to the hotel. In his room, Webb writes at his desk.
Come in.
Good evening, Sir William.
Oh, Justice May.
More protocol, I'm afraid. You have the British judge sitting in my place.
I'm afraid I don't follow you.
On the Japanese instrument of surrender, America signed first, then China. The seating arrangement for the judges should reflect this. Right now, you have Lord Patrick sitting where I should sit. My country suffered the most from this war, and my place in the seating arrangement says a great deal to millions of Asians. Thank you.
In a garden, an announcer stands on a footbridge before six shapely girls clad in swimsuits. A banner reads, Miss Occupation Beauty Contest.
And that's her, Kate. Let's hear it, boys. Give her a 10 and a nice big round of applause for your lovely contestant from Australia.
Sailors hold up numbered
and
signs.
Now, speaking of occupation, I've got a big preoccupation with our next contestant. It's none other than Barbara. Come on over, Barbara.
An officer faces Rowling and McDougal.
Crazy, isn't it? What's that?
I was in Pearl Harbor when they attacked. Took some shrapnel in the leg. Lost some good buddies.
We spent 4 years pounding the shit out of each other, and now we're gonna help them rebuild.
Oh, well. Give them a fair trial.
McDougal nods.
Then hang him.
The officer shifts his hard stare from Rowling to McDougal before stepping away. The Canadian judge faces his Dutch counterpart.
To a fair trial.
They raise their glasses and sip.
And now, it's my distinct pleasure to introduce to you none other than Ichiko from Yokohama!
In a newsreel, a bus pulls up to an institutional building. Military police escort a line of prisoners from the vehicle. A subtitle reads, The International Military Tribunal for the Far East was convened to try 28 war crime suspects led by former General Hideki Tojo, plunging not only the people of Japan, but also a billion people in the Far East into misery. In chambers, the judges except Zarayanov wear black robes.
Well, the marathon begins.
I'm hoping it's a sprint.
Seating arrangements fine?
Oh, very good, thank you.
Gentlemen, I will speak, ask and respond to questions on our collective behalf.
As the door opens, Webb leads the others into a corridor. Two MPs flank the doorway, and a man bows politely to the passing justices. The nine judges stride into the courtroom, document files under their arms. People in military and civilian dress sit at long tables.
All rise.
The gallery gets to its feet and turns to the front of the room, where Justice Webb leads his colleagues steadily up a small flight of steps. Nearby, a photographer pans a tripod-mounted motion picture camera as he documents the proceedings. The judges file around Justice Webb, with May to his left and Higgins to his right. Wearing solemn expressions, they set their documents down. At a nod from their president, the judges take their seats facing the gallery. The onlookers proceed to sit as well.
The International Military Tribunal for the Far East is now in session.
MPs watch over the defendants.
There has been no more important criminal trial in all history.
The accused before us include former prime ministers, finance ministers, chiefs of staff, and others who have filled the highest places in the government of Japan.
The former high rank of the accused entitles them to no greater consideration than would be extended to the humblest Japanese private or Korean guard. To our great task, we bring open minds, both on the facts and the law. The onus will be on the prosecution to establish guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. I will now call on the accused to plead guilty or not guilty.
Excuse me, Mr. President.
Defense lawyer Kiyose.
A man interprets for the goateed lawyer.
Before the commencement of this arraignment process, one point I'd like to make is Sir Webb is not qualified to administer justice in this trial.
On what grounds?
I wish to assure you that this challenge is made with the greatest respect for this court, but from a standpoint of fairness, you should not be permitted to conduct this trial because you have already investigated alleged Japanese atrocities in New Guinea.
Higgins shoots Patrick a stunned look as flashbulbs pop.
I'll take no part in the response. Justice Northcroft.
The judge from New Zealand eyes the document.
Article 2 of the Charter prescribes that the tribunal shall consist of members appointed by General MacArthur, the Supreme Commander. That being so, it does not rest with the tribunal to unseat anyone appointed by the Supreme Commander.
I will now call on the accused to plead. Araki Sadow, how do you plead?
A defendant with a bushy mustache stands beside a man in military dress, wearing an armband reading Page.
I do not accept any of these charges. Not guilty.
Shigemitsu Mamoru, how do you plead?
I plead not guilty.
The bespectacled Shigemitsu sits.
Defendant Tojo, former prime minister.
The page holds a microphone before a third, diminutive, balding defendant.
To all these charges, I plead not guilty.
Tojo takes his seat. One by one, six other standing men give their pleas from the defendant's box as the court page holds out a microphone in front of each.
Not guilty.
In the hotel restaurant, a robe-clad woman sets a platter of beef Wellington at the end of a table where the justices dine, then bows courteously. Rolling faces Webb across from him.
The Japanese defense counsel Kiyosu was clever. Did you feel offended by it?
He questioned my integrity.
You did previously investigate Japanese war crimes. He was playing a smart legal card, not making a personal insult.
I investigated war crimes in New Guinea based on evidence and made my decisions without bias, as I will again do so here in Tokyo.
Water under the bridge, Sir William. Challenge was nicely rejected by Northcroft, all in accordance with the charter.
I shouldn't need the charter to protect me.
As Patrick sips from his wine goblet, Webb wipes his mouth.
Excuse me, gentlemen. I have some work to do. Excuse me.
As President Webb heads for the exit, McDougal gives him a slight nod. Patrick addresses the others.
It takes fortitude to maintain a courtroom at this level. Few men can do it.
Justice May lifts his wine glass and nods. Zaryanov reaches for a bottle of clear liquid in front of him.
He says the headmaster has left and now we can relax. Let's drink.
The general offers Higgins a cordial glass.
Not for me, thank you. I'm rather tired.
Zaryanov nods insistently, and his interpreter lifts her glass.
To Russians, it is culturally important to accept.
As Justice Rowling eyes Higgins, McDougal gazes with suspicion. After a prompting nod from the general, the American raises his glass. The Russians drain their glasses in one gulp. Across from them, Higgins reluctantly takes a sip before lowering the drink. In his room, Justice Webb sits on the edge of his bed examining a document. As a ceiling fan spins overhead, he sets the paper aside. He removes his eyeglasses, then wipes them with a handkerchief. The silhouetted tribunal president stares forward for a moment before bowing his head. Words appear. May 13th, 1946, day 4 of the trial. Webb speaks into a microphone.
I give the floor to the defense counsel, Mr. Kiyose.
Rowling listens intently as the goateed defense counsel speaks from a podium.
I would like to explain the motion I'm putting forward with respect to the jurisdiction of this tribunal. The Pact of Paris, 1928, condemns war as an instrument of national policy, but does not consider it a crime.
Higgins glances at Webb in disbelief.
This tribunal does not have the authority to try crimes against peace, and therefore the counts related to them should be excluded immediately.
Order! Order!
Words appear. May 14th, 1946. Defense Council member, American lawyer Major Ben Blakeney, addresses the court.
Mr. Blakeney, you wish to speak?
A man in uniform stands at the podium.
The proposition that killing in war is not murder, that killing in war is not murder, follows from the fact that war is legal. This legalized killing, justifiable homicide, technically perhaps, however repulsive, however abhorrent, has never been thought of as imposing criminal responsibility. If the killing of Admiral Kidd by the bombing of Pearl Harbor is murder.
Zaryanov adjusts his headset.
We know the name of the very man whose hands loosed the atomic bomb on Hiroshima.
Rowling licks his lips and works his jaw.
We know the chief of staff who planned that act.
McDougal eyes Northcroft.
We know the chief of the responsible state.
As Higgins shifts in his seat, Webb jots notes. Later, MPs open double doors, and May and Higgins lead the others into a corridor. The heavy-set and slight-built reporters buttonhole the Australian.
President Webb, what do you think of the defense motion that the tribunal has no authority to try anyone for crimes of aggression? If they are right, wouldn't the trial have to be dismissed?
Hey. You gonna file charges against President Truman for the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
Northcroft and Higgins lead the others into chambers. Then they start to shed their robes.
Kiyose and Blakeney intend to challenge every count.
In which case, we should all go home.
The Nazis use the same defense, arguing that war is legal, and that the plotting and execution of war by Nazi officials was also legal. It didn't work there, and it won't work here.
In my opinion, we need to consider any historical precedents, not just an argument based on Nuremberg.
Rowling produces a silver cigarette case. Zaryanov gestures emphatically at the interpreter, a lit cigarette between his fingers. As the others look on expectantly, the Russian paces.
The general, I do not wish to repeat exactly what he said, but he asks us all to remember that many lives were lost in this war, and the challenges by the defense team must be overruled with or without precedence.
We do know that the Treaty of Versailles ascribed guilt to Germany and forced it to pay for losses incurred in World War I.
And the international community outlawed the waging of aggressive war as a direct result of the Anti-War Pact of Paris of 1928.
Which Japan signs, setting its own legal precedent. Our response to Kiyose should be that the interpretation of law is constantly evolving towards greater justice. And as for Blakeney, well, we've been appointed to judge Japanese war criminals, not the actions of the Americans. That may be for a future tribunal. For now, the motions by the defense team must be overruled.
I think we need to discuss the defense arguments at greater length.
To what end?
So that others do not later question our deliberations and their outcome.
Higgins glares at Rowling.
Entertaining and ultimately rejecting the motion is a complete and utter waste of time.
The American turns on his heel and removes his robe.
We have no choice but to deny the motion. We have to press forward. As the president, I will write up a statement of reasons for the denial to be reviewed and discussed by us all later.
Justice Patrick rolls his eyes and sets a hand to his head. Higgins picks up a file folder from the table, stares hard at Roland, then heads from Chambers. The Dutch judge rests his lowered brow on his thumb. He raises his head before setting an ashtray aside and collecting his notes. Staring glumly, he takes a long drag on his cigarette. Later, he heads down a corridor where Webb stands beside a dark-haired man.
Roland, let me introduce Mr. Justice Powell from India.
Nice to meet you, Bed Roland.
Oh, you're the judge from Netherlands.
Yes, indeed. You've got quite some catching up to do,
Even the majority verdict is presented as unanimous. Dissent is never disclosed.
I beg your pardon?
Your words in the chamber. I heard most of your discussion while having tea with President Webb.
Webb, eyes rolling. Later, wearing a tuxedo, Roling makes his way through a ballroom past others in evening dress. At the top of a staircase, McDougal waits beside a man with thinning hair and a white tux.
Justice Roling, I'd like you to meet Justice Jaramillo from the Philippines. Just arrived.
Welcome to Japan.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Not long ago, I could not have imagined being on Japanese soil.
Nor handing out justice, I suspect.
Certainly not in these peaceful circumstances.
Gentlemen, good evening.
Evening.
Evening. Mr. Roling, have you ever?
Seeker, excuse us for a moment.
Of course.
As a decorated military man leads Roling off, subtitles appear. Are you enjoying Tokyo? How is the tribunal going?
Well,
you are always welcome at the liaison mission. Who's playing, General?
Eta Schneider,
quite famous in Germany before the war. She came all this way for a party. Hardly. She's been stranded here since 1941. The Dutch officer leads his countrymen inside another room, where they stand with others in evening dress. An onlooker in the row in front shifts on his feet, revealing a blonde woman clad in a white jacket and gold skirt playing a grand piano. As she shuts her eyes and shakes her head, Justice Roling makes his way forward. With hunched shoulders, the pianist strikes the keys, transported by the music. Roling gazes in admiration. With her eyes still closed, the pianist straightens, then bows. Roling applauds along with the others. Now on her feet, the pianist sets a hand to her chest and bows. Roling gazes intently as she steps away. Later, he follows her down a corridor where guests engage in conversation.
Frau Schneider?
Frau Harich Schneider.
Entschuldigung, Frau Harich Schneider. My name is Bert Roling.
Should I know you?
I play the violin.
How nice for you.
I thought maybe we could play together someday.
I don't play with amateurs.
Slack-jawed, Roling watches the pianist make her way downstairs, followed by a kimono-clad assistant. Near the foot of the stairs, she glances over at the Dutch officer nearby.
General Willink, is that man an employee of your Dutch liaison?
Justice Roling is our man on the tribunal.
She glances off, then eyes her assistant.
Get a card.
The woman nods and follows her back upstairs.
Well, I would have to assess your ability.
That would be a great honor.
Call me. If my schedule is free, we'll set a date.
Thank you, Shun.
The pianist passes Roling a business card, then steps away. Roling eyes it with great interest before setting a cigarette between his lips and pocketing the card. A sedan waits outside the Imperial Hotel, headlights shining while guards stand sentry. Justice Patrick rounds a corner in a hallway and sees a bellhop assist Justice Higgins with luggage.
What's going on?
I'm going home.
Why?
The American shuts the door to his room.
In all good conscience, I cannot continue to be part of these proceedings.
Your own president asked you to take on this duty.
He also told me it would take no longer than 6 to 7 months. Well, that isn't going to happen, not from where I stand. The prosecution and defense teams are stonewalling the entire process. and our fellow judges have already adopted a position.
We should all work together to improve the process. We welcome any proposals you might have.
I have made proposals, and they were not accepted.
Then let's re-examine them. If you leave now, it sends a very bad message.
I am sorry. I have already given this a great deal of thought. My first sworn duty is to serve as the Chief Justice of the Massachusetts Superior Court. I cannot forsake that for this. I wish you all good luck.
The justices shake hands. As Higgins passes down the corridor, Patrick stares after him, then reaches in his pocket. Taking out a handkerchief, the Scotsman wipes his mouth. He leans on his cane as he ambles down the brick-columned hallway. Fade to black. Credits appear. Based on an original idea by NHK Japan Broadcasting Corporation, narrator Stacy Keach. Red letters appear within three brightly tinged eggs, NHK. Logos appear, NEP, NHK, Throne, Serif. Multicolored stripes flank a logo, DCTV, Don Carmody Television. A logo, Fat Productions, from Amsterdam to Tokyo, Film Arts Theater Television. This dramatization is inspired by true events. However, certain scenes, characters, names, businesses, incidents, locations, and events have been fictionalized for dramatic purposes. And in those instances, any similarity to actual persons, living or dead, or to actual entities or events is purely coincidental. This film is protected under the laws of Canada, United States, Netherlands, Japan, and other countries. Any unauthorized exhibition, distribution, or reproduction of this motion picture or videotape or any part thereof, including the soundtrack, may result in criminal penalties. The production of this episode did not harm any animals. Copyright 2016 Tokyo Productions, Inc., Fat Productions BV, and NHK. All rights reserved.